into sports.
20 yards out, Urs to shoot, don't shoot! Oh, what a goal from Fabinho! Wow!
Then get into the all-new OTB Sports app.
I think when he apologises to me, I probably will say hello to him, yeah. No,
videos, sports news, live scores, interviews.
If Fabregas is going to come up to me in the street and give me some of the mouth that he would have given me on a football pitch, what would he do? He'd get a slap.
Plus, exclusive content on the OTB Podcast Network. The biggest names in sports. Ready when you are. Search OTB Sports on your app store and download it now.
The OTB Podcast Network.
Football on Off the Ball.
With Paddy Power. More confident than United before a Europa League final. Gamble responsibly. See dunluey.net.
Yes, indeed. The Premier League is back and we've got live and exclusive national radio commentary every single weekend right here on Off the Ball. Tonight on the Football Show, we'll be joined by Adam Pope of the BBC to talk about Marcelo Bielsa's first game in the Premier League. We'll also keep you up to speed on everything that is happening in tonight's game. It has just gone half-time, I can tell you, between Brighton and Chelsea. Chelsea take a one-goal lead into the break. Jorginho with the penalty to put them 1-0 up. Timo Werner went down for the foul before that, and Werner has looked very lively on his debut. Himself and Kai Havertz, the two debutants for Chelsea tonight. Aaron Connolly has just come on for the injured Adam Lallana, while Jason Malumbi is not in the Brighton squad. We are starting tonight in the Football Show, though, with Mark Lawrenson. Mark, how are you getting on?
I'm good, thank you.
Let's start with Saturday evening. It really is the only place to start. Liverpool 4, Leeds United 3. I'm not sure about you, but that is one of the best opening weekend games I can ever remember in the Premier League era.
No, I'm with you. I can't remember anything better. And massive credit to Leeds. With Matt on the Friday night, I was saying to him that I thought Leeds were going to do really, really well just because of the way that they played. There's lots of pace about the team, extremely organised. I mean, if defensively they've been much better, they might actually have gone on and won the game. And I think from Liverpool's point of view, they weren't good defensively. But you know what? The great thing, I think, when ex-pros look at games like that, you kind of think, well, they actually managed to win when they didn't play well, which, to be honest with you, is how you win the league.
Yeah, we are going to be speaking to Adam Pope at the BBC later to go deeper into Leeds. But just your overall take, just to finish up on Leeds here, on Marcelo Bielsa's, I guess, his approach to Saturday night's game. It's as we expected. Perhaps we didn't expect him to score three goals. And in fairness, they did score with every shot on target. So there's a couple of ways of looking at that. And I know Bielsa afterwards said we were efficient, but we didn't create enough goal-scoring opportunities.
Which is fair enough. But the fact, I mean, how many games have we seen at Anfield last year where teams would just sit in and invite Liverpool onto them, and in the end, you know, the inevitable happens, which is Liverpool win and win easy, because once you score the first goal against teams, they've got no plan B. It's only plan A, and obviously you can go on it because just the game opens up, you get even more chances. But I think that he'd obviously done his homework, which we know he's mad on studying the opposition. I thought the attacked Liverpool sort of Trent Alexander-Arnold and Joe Gomez, and obviously even Van Dijk in the end was wobbling and making mistakes. But it was the pace and the ferocity with which they attacked, I think, that put Liverpool, you know, under pressure and caused them massive, massive problems. They did a little bit of a Liverpool to Liverpool, you know, that playing that kind of way. So if they can keep it up, it'll be fab for them. But we'll just have to wait and see, obviously, because, I mean, the demand playing that way, week in, week out, in the Premier League, just coming up from the Championship, are very, very difficult to cope with.
For sure. I think a lot of people will have taken them as their second team immediately after the performance on Saturday night.
Yeah.
You mentioned a couple of the defensive frailties that were on show from Liverpool on Saturday. Are you worried at all? Are you worried that this could become a theme?
No, they just didn't play well. And I think they were taken aback by, how good Leeds were in terms of going at them and going for the jugular. So you wouldn't be worried about that. It's very rare they ever really concede three goals. I know you might point to Watford last year when they didn't turn up, etc. But no, I wouldn't be. World class players don't suddenly become poor players overnight. And I think Klopp said afterwards, he said, you know, it's not like riding a bike. You just get back on the bike and off you go. You've got to just, there are certain things you've got to do defensively every week in, week out, and if you don't do, as we saw on Saturday, then then you're in trouble. No, I think they just had a bad day defensively. I think that's all it'll be looked at as well.
He's obviously right in what he says then, is he, that you need weeks together, basically, even if you've played 500 games together.
Yeah.
If you have an off-season, you kind of start from square one again?
Oh, yeah, well, that's the way that it is. It's why, that you know, at the start of the season, everyone gets together, and you know, certainly Liverpool players, and no one will say, yeah, let's win the league again, or let's win the Champions League. You're just settled to win anything. But also, I always feel in the first 5 to 10 games of the season, you're looking at the opposition, not just about the way they play against you, but were they fitter than you? You know, and that's a big thing, because obviously everybody tried to get fit for the first game of the season. But in terms of things like, you know, midfield players and strikers, in terms of touch, you know, playing competitive games is the only way actually you become extremely competitive. So in many ways for Liverpool, that was a fabulous workout. Didn't play particularly well without the ball, but as I said to you before, they won, and that's all that really matters. I mean, that'll be first and foremost the clock, which will be, well, we've won, we got the points. But he will be obviously making points to the players about the way that they played in the game.
Yeah, one of those players he might look at is Trent Alexander-Arnold. I mean, is there a situation here where he is so unbelievably good going forward, Mark, that there is bound to be a moment or two here in the season where he lapses, where he isn't quite on it defensively? It did feel like a bit of early season rustiness. Is there a theme developing here at all, where once every 5, even 10 games that Trent Alexander-Arnold tends to have that lapse?
Possibly, but then, how many points did Liverpool win the league by? And it didn't play particularly well, after lockdown. So the thing about Trent Alexander-Arnold, it's what he gives you going forward. If you then want him to be a little bit more defensive-minded, he's not going to be the same player. So, you know, it's you're kind of stuck between the devil and the deep blue sea in many ways. You wouldn't say he's a great defender, but with his pace, he should be a little bit better. And occasionally, I think he gets a little bit carried away insofar as he goes forward, he creates, you know, umpteen opportunities, scores goals and free kicks and stuff. I think sometimes what you just have to probably remind him is he's actually a defender. And, you know, it's quite important sometimes to defend. But look, you know, the way that Liverpool are, I mean, you know, we know the best centre-back partnership is Gomez and, of course, Van Dijk. So they know how Liverpool play. They know the two full-backs bomb on. And generally, you know, you kind of pull one of the midfield players back to make it like a three, just in case, because of the full-backs going forward. So, hey, it's, you know, didn't play well, scored 4 goals, won the game. It is really a case of move on. But Leeds, certainly, I think everybody looking at that thought, wow. I mean, they're going to be a real handful in this league.
Not to labour on the defensive point too much here, Mark, but just a statistic I saw on The Athletic yesterday, James Pearce's piece said that Liverpool conceded just 15 goals in their opening 26 league matches last season, but from February's visit of West Ham United onwards this calendar year, Liverpool have leaked 21 goals in 13 league matches. So they've gone from 0.58 of a concession per game up to 1.62 per game. Now, of course, you throw in a title celebration, you throw in the fact that they finally won their first league title for 30 years. That being said, I guess if Jurgen Klopp is looking for some early season sticks to beat his team with, which you might often need as a title challenger, he's got it right there.
He has, but then I suppose, if you then looked at the number of goals that Liverpool conceded throughout the season, it would be, I don't know, how many was it? And I think that's ultimately what you look at is, because if you're conceding less than one a game with the forward line that they've got, it's not going to really cause too many problems because they score goals for fun. So it's just a balancing act. And I think the other thing with Klopp, you'd be very, very wary with the players insofar as he'll have reminded them when they came back for pre-season training how difficult it's going to be. I think there's only City have defended the Premier League, is it? Or is there only one team, I think, that's actually won it consecutively? Is that right?
Well, City and Manchester United, obviously.
Yeah, right. So straight away, he knows. Klopp knows. He's like thinking, no, this is going to be much more difficult than it was last year, and it is because Chelsea have improved, Arsenal have improved, Manchester United, Manchester City, all those kind of teams have improved. So they're all going to take points off each other. But you don't look at that one game in isolation, because it's just not the way to do it. You're kind of going, okay, and maybe I think, so they've got what, Chelsea, then Arsenal in the next two games.
Yeah.
And then you have a little look then and thinking, so if, you know, Chelsea and Arsenal are creating lots of opportunities, then you may start to think that you might have a problem. But, I mean, you could see when he mouthed to the camera when he was walking off the pitch, Clark just went, wow. he meant wow as in he was impressed with Leeds. Mm. It wasn't his team. It was like, wow, Leeds. And they were very much just like a kind of younger version, slightly inexperienced, defensively not good, of Liverpool on the day. But, you know, can they continue? That's the thing for Leeds, from Leeds' point of view.
For sure. Now, I guess against Chelsea and Arsenal, they're going to be up against the likes of Timo Werner and Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang. If they're conceding chances, it's not exactly the end of the world. So, I mean, maybe it's just a situation where Klopp is saying, wow, after every game that they win this season, it could be a cracking year. Do you think they really need to get into the transfer market now, though, Mark? Just not even in terms of that first 11, in terms of potentially another signing, even another centre-back to kind of prop up their options at the back if injuries happen, or if, you know, it's going to be such a compressed season, people will get tired quickly.
Yeah, it's always nice to bring other players in, but of course, you know, with Klopp, when you look at what he's done with the football club and the players he's brought in, I think the only one he got wrong was a goalkeeper, you know, Karius, and he didn't pay much money for him generally. So they've all been extremely successful, and he's made them all better players. And I think he's caught a little bit between two stools, which is, you know, if you want to bring players in, great, but players will be looking at Liverpool and thinking, hold on a minute, I'm probably not going to start in this team. And the way, you know, the money, obviously, that they will pay those players is outstanding. But also, you know, other top six teams could match that money. And the guy that you're looking at thinks, well, I'm not really going to play at Liverpool, but I might play at Man United, or I might play at Chelsea or Arsenal or Tottenham, or, you know, what are those teams? So that's a real problem. He loves the kids. He loves, obviously, you know, the three kids who've played probably more of the games than anyone else. I think he thinks they've all got a chance. You know, Curtis Jones, the right back, Williams, isn't it? And the little left winger, right stroke right winger they've got from Fulham, who really does look like he's going to be a player. So I think in an ideal world, he'd want another centre-back. But I think they've got one coming through who they really, really rate. So, you know, Klopp, very much, you know, he's not worried about how old they are. He just thinks if they can do it and they can play, he'll play them.
Yeah, and I guess Curtis Jones coming on so early was quite telling, as you said, on Saturday.
One thing about Curtis Jones is he makes things happen. Mm. Now, you know, for a younger of obviously limited experience, and, you know, there's so much, everything's overanalyzed anyway, but if you watch him play in every single game, He makes things happen, and he's a very mature footballer for one so young. He's hungry, and he's got lots of ability. So, you know, Klopp's very much kind of, get him on, let him play. I don't think he'll start too many games, well, certainly not at the moment, but in the end, I think he'll come on a regular basis.
One last point on Liverpool before we move on, Mark. If we're going to jump to conclusions about the defence, then, you know, I guess week one is when we get carried away. You can, if you're a Liverpool fan, get carried away with Mo Salah's performance on Saturday night. 76 goals in 109 Premier League games at this point. Like, if you're judging it on 90 minutes, it's looking like the sign of a 2017-18 version of Mo Salah yet again. But we can't forget that the last 2 years, he has also been brilliant, just not at the absurd levels of 17-18.
Amazing, honestly, absolutely amazing, and I'm pretty sure Klopp's thinking, crikey, how long is there in the transfer window? Because he's now at the stage where, you know, your Madrid and your Barcelonas and PSG, if they've got any money, they could well be knocking on the door. That would be my worry, really. You know, I'd have to say that I think if they came in for Salah, I think he'd go. I think he feels he's done absolutely everything he possibly can for Liverpool, which, you know, is fine. And he probably thinks that he's earned the right to go. And, you know, he's gone, how many different countries he's already played in, so he's not worried about going to another country. So that could possibly be a problem for Liverpool.
Is there talk of that, Mark? I know. Obviously, you'd be well informed with the club and all that. Is that a genuine worry within Liverpool that this could happen over the next? What are we thinking here? Like next summer?
No, I'm thinking now in the transfer window. You know, so I think it's very much a possibility. The other thing as well is, I mean, I'm not trying to sell him, but I do feel with him that I think he's done everything he possibly can for the football club. And, you know, somebody like Madrid and obviously Real Madrid and Barcelona and PSG came in, I think you'd be tempted, would you not?
For sure. I guess some of the logic out there this year was that Barcelona and Real Madrid, nor any club in the world, have the financial spending power as in previous summers, and potentially Liverpool might be insulated in that way. But as you say, with a player like Mo Salah, if you're going to force somebody to write a cheque for one player in European football, it might just be him.
Yeah, well, I'm absolutely right. So that's always going to be a worry. I mean, the more successful you are. I mean, look, go back to Coutinho. Basically, Coutinho, the sale of Coutinho, they ended up with Van Dijk and Alisson. So, you know, they were very, very clever in that way. So, obviously, if he did leave, you'd be thinking, crikey, who's going to replace him? But, you know what? The one thing about the football club now with Michael Edwards is basically in charge of recruitment. He will have in his office for every player that they've got, he'll have a replacement, and he probably has two or three. So that's how well they've done, basically, because the recruitment's been fabulous, as everybody knows. And that's just the way that football is nowadays. It's very, very difficult if you've got a player of the ability of Mo Salah and he wants to go and play for PSG. It's very, very difficult to stop him, to be honest with you.
It sounds like you're slightly worried, Mark, that this might actually turn into a legitimate thing. Like, it's one of the stories that has come, it was via DAZN, an agent who knows Koeman quite well says, it's Siak Swart who says, I know Koeman wants him and I know Salah would like to go. This is obviously in relation to Barcelona.
Yeah, well, you know, that's how football works. I mean, I laugh now because, you know, Manchester United are obviously flirting with Jordan Sancho. And we keep reading that they've agreed the wages. They've agreed the agent's fee. They've agreed the player's wages. And all of them, I'm going, hold on a minute, but Dortmund, they've not had a bid. So, but that's the way that football is that it's always been that way, but now it's just absolutely, totally, completely blatant. You just ring up the player and say, right, would you like to come and play for us? And, you know, here's your contract. And obviously, we'll try and make it happen.
Right, well, if anybody thought that the return of Premier League football would be bye-bye to the transfer rumours, then you're sorely mistaken. So we'll keep an eye on that one over the next few weeks, Mark. We should talk about the other side of Liverpool after yesterday. Phenomenal win, really, for Everton. They hadn't won away against one of the big six in 60 attempts. So I guess with the new players, this felt like a turning point, but that statistic also illustrates just how big yesterday's win was.
Yeah, it's fabulous, and I thought they played extremely well. And I think, you know, Ancelotti is an extremely good manager. He was the only one, apparently, that Roman Abramovich said he made a mistake when he let him go. Said he should have kept him. He knows European football. He knows world football. Of course, he's now signing players. Also, you know, two of the players, Alan, and obviously who's the other ones that he signed? James Rodriguez. So he knows them. So he knows what they can and cannot do, and I think that's very important. And he's just got this aura about him, to be honest with you, Ancelotti. And, you know, he's now attracting, I think, you know, these lads are outstanding players, Doucouré as well from Watford. But if you look at Everton in the last two or three years, since probably Mashiri took over, they signed an awful lot of average players. And by the way, but some of them are on massive money. So they've had the fingers burnt a little bit. But, you know, they trust the manager, and I think that's obviously the important thing. So they'll be fine. I don't honestly see them finishing in the top six. But I think, you know, I don't know what's decent for Everton. I mean, that's $64,000 question, basically.
The word aura there is interesting. Like, it definitely seems that Carlo Ancelotti brings a lot of that to the players. It definitely feels like the idea of James Rodriguez being an Everton player is important for that same reason. Like, you listen to Dominic Calvert-Lewin in the aftermath of the match yesterday. He was a man who looked like he was floating on air after the game, just so happy to be playing alongside a player of his quality. How important is that from a player's standpoint, that you have this aura coming in to play beside you?
Oh, it's massive. It's absolutely massive. Because players know players. And when I say that, they know when they sign a really good player. It's like Fernandes coming in at Manchester United. All of a sudden, he had a player who played with his head up and wanted to pass it forward at every available opportunity. Then, if you're a Manchester United striker, you're thinking, wow, we want him in the team every single week because you're going to get loads of chances. And that's the way that it's going to be with Everton. So, you know, Calvert-Lewin's done extremely well. He just keeps improving. We knew about his, you know, ability in the air, his strength, his pace, holding the ball up and stuff. And we kind of thought, well, didn't score too many goals. But last year, he's improved in terms of his goal rate. He'll have loads of chances. And if Richarlison is fit and in form, they're just going to be a better side. Everton, a much better side.
Let's talk about Spurs, because Jose Mourinho had a right go at his Tottenham team after the match. Now, in a second, you'll hear him criticise the lack of pressing and energy levels, but he also singled out Matt Doherty for some special treatment as well. Have a listen to this.
Okay. You can, for example, look to Doherty, a player with normally an incredible condition. He didn't have pre-season. He went direct from holidays to national team matches. Direct, no pre-season at all, not one single training session. He went direct from holidays to national team. He played two consecutive matches, and today he was not Matt Doherty like he normally is. So these are the things that we knew that could happen to us.
To be honest, I think the struggle was starts in the way we press, or I would say in the way we didn't press. Because our pressure up was very, very poor. I would say it was a lazy pressure. And when you have a lazy pressure, you don't press, you let opponents to build from the back, and then they have players with incredible quality, which is not just Everton, it's almost everybody in the Premier League, for not to say everybody. And when you let them play from the back, then they are comfortable to have the ball. In spite of that, I repeat, in the first half we had we had some good moments, and we created some good chances. I think the chance of Doherty is really a big one, and is a sequence of a great moment of football. But Pickford was there and made a great save also on Dele Alli.
Does it surprise you, though, to be stood here one game in and be talking about your players being lazy and they're pressing? You've got a hell of a schedule ahead. To be like that in game one, is that surprising?
Lazy pressure. Lazy pressure up front. That's what I'm saying. And that creates unbalanced situations for the rest of the team. I could also feel some of my players are not fit. We had also other players that were a little bit in trouble by the physical point of view due to very strange pre-seasons for some, and in other cases not even pre-season. But congratulations to my dear friend Carlo and Everton boys.
My dear friend Carlo. Mark, who is to blame for that, the lazy pressure? Is it the manager? Is it the players?
Yeah.
A bit of both?
Manager. You know, listen, no stone left unturned now. The check in so many ways. The way that he's vested in training and everything, and you can tell exactly what each player has put into session. So, you know, and they've got that many flipping staff at all these clubs. There's probably about five guys just analysing this every single day. So, you'd like... The thing with Jose, it's kind of, there's always an excuse that, you know, as he's got older, he just comes out with more and more excuses. And, you know, Tottenham are, on the day, very good, but the problem is they have so many days where they're not very good. I think that's a problem. And Jose is very, very clever because he went on this old thing about Doherty there, and really you kind of, in the end, you kind of, what's he talking about now? It's just he talks and talks and talks, and you're thinking, well, surely the idea is, you know, your players are ready. Everton were ready. Why can't Tottenham be ready? But there will always be an excuse for Jose. That's how he deals with defeats.
It's quite reminiscent of his second stint in Chelsea when that went sour. He had a big issue about that pre-season tour. I think it was to the United States. Despite the fact that every top six club had a very similar tour, they were all relatively jet-lagged or relatively interrupted pre-season. Like, I mean, the fact that you're pointing out here that that is the manager's fault, why is Jose talking about lazy pressing if he, of all people, should know that it is up to him to fix that?
Yeah, of course it is. It's his job. And listen, you know, when you start, sometimes you start a game, even all the best teams, they start a game and they're just not quite at it. But that's why you have half time. Mm-hmm. And you come in at half time and you sort the problem out. I mean, that's a whole... You'd have, you know, generally with managers, the biggest single times for managers is obviously coaching in terms of up to the game, in terms of the team you're playing against and their particular style. But that 15 minutes at half-time is the most important of any. Because, you know, if you're losing, you've got to change it. Or, even if you don't change the personnel, you maybe just change the way that you're playing in terms of the actual tactical formation. So that's what he gets paid his 13, 14, 15 million pounds a year for. So he's got away with one.
I should say there's been an equaliser at the Amex tonight. Leandro Trossard has scored a bit of a screamer, actually, to equalise proceedings after 55 minutes. People who don't want Kepa as their Chelsea goalkeeper, well, their case might be strengthened after that. It appears to be within his reach, but it goes just beyond his arms into the back of the net. It is 1-1 after 55 minutes. Just on that idea of Chelsea's pressing then, is there a situation where we're already getting to a point where the instructions of Jose Mourinho aren't fully being implemented by the players? Because there does seem to be a breakdown somewhere, Mark, already after game week one.
Well, that's the first thing you kind of look at. I mean, I don't know if did you watch the Netflix thing on Tottenham?
Yeah.
Which is basically, it was a Jose show, wasn't it? So, you know, and it was, you didn't really get into the nitty-gritty of too many things. But, you know, generally Jose's a really, really good manager. And the players, and you're kind of thinking, well, they're just not quite at it. Look at Tottenham may just be slow starters. Excuse me, I wouldn't know the stats on whether they are or they aren't, but they may be just slow starters. It may well be that, you know, in the next game that they're outstanding, but it's a strange thing to say, certainly what he said about the slow pressing, etc., because, you know, he stood on the touchline and, like, there's no crowd, so there's no real noise. And if you want to get at one or two of your players, you know, forget about the half time bit. Just after 20 minutes, you get at them. But I don't know. Maybe Jose's now a little bit. I always felt with all the teams when he was really, really successful, his teams would run to a brick wall for him, and they play. You know, sometimes they play different players in different positions, and they would still put in a performance. I think it's a long time since we've seen that with him, and you just wonder sometimes. When you listen to it as well, where you think maybe Jose's run his course and he's run his race?
Yeah, for sure. Like I think that there's a lot of evidence already out there, Mark, to show that we might already be reaching that point, which is one negative way of looking at it. I just want to tell you as well that Chelsea have just gone 2-1 up again. They've retaken the lead, and I'm telling you, we might have an early contender for goal of the season. Reece James with an outrageous strike from 30 yards out, the outside of the right boot, postage stamp stuff from James with his first ever Premier League goal. 58 minutes on the clock. It is Brighton 1, Chelsea 2. Just a final point here, Mark, on the Spurs performance from yesterday. What did you make of Matt Doherty's first showing in a Tottenham shirt?
Well, as Jose said, he's just been thrown in. But you know what? I think it's a really, really clever signing, that. And I can't believe other teams weren't involved in trying to take him. So I think he's just going to get better and better and better. And listen, The fact that he chucked him in, Jose's kind of saying, you know, we've probably pinched a player here in front of everyone else's noses. So I'm really surprised as well that Wolves have let him go. But no, he's going to be absolutely fine there. And he's a proper player, isn't he? And he's one of those 100%ers week in, week out. They obviously don't fancy Aurier, do they? Because I think defence is not particularly good. So. No, Matt Doherty, well, it's a great move for him, but I think it's a good signing for Tottenham.
All right, Mark Lawrenson, thanks a million for joining us this evening. I appreciate that.
Pleasure. Cheers.
Mark Lawrenson there on the line. Right, let us hear the story of that incredible goal at the Amex Stadium. Here is Alan Lewis.
Brighton 1, Chelsea 2, and Brighton back on level terms for just a couple of minutes. And what a goal to put Chelsea back in front. Reece James with an absolute thunderbolt from 30 yards out, picking the ball up outside the box. Right-footed shot, giving Ryan absolutely no chance. Brighton 1, Chelsea 2.
Yeah, quite the goal. 59 minutes played there. Brighton going close to equalising once again. It is a cracking game at the Amex. We will keep you up to speed on everything that happens for the remainder of the evening. Right, next we are turning back to that incredible opening game, to Leeds' return to the Premier League anyway. It was Liverpool 4, Leeds 3 on Saturday night. We're going to be joined by BBC Leeds' Adam Pope right after these.
Football on Off the Ball
with Paddy Power. More confident than United before a Europa League final. Gamble responsibly. See dunlewy.net.
You're welcome back. 65 minutes gone at the Amex. It is still Brighton Hove Albion 1, Chelsea 2. And they're just showing replays of a Trossard goal, which was an equaliser at the time for Brighton. And it actually goes under the body of Kepa. So that won't help his claim to hold on to that number one jersey. Cameras panning to Caballero all night. But that Reece James goal, which currently has Chelsea 2-1 up, an early contender for goal of the season. An early contender for game of the season, though, will certainly be Leeds United 3, Liverpool 4 at Anfield on Saturday night. Delighted to say that we've got Adam Pope of BBC Leeds with us. Thanks for taking the call, Adam. How are you getting on?
I'm doing fine, thanks, Aaron. Yeah, it was a tremendous game, wasn't it? And look, we all know that Leeds were unlucky not to come away with something.
Yeah, for sure. It's one of these weird moments where the game was so hyped, there were all the ingredients for such a mad game, but so often that never materialises. Saturday was very different, though.
It was, and, you know, the hype was there, the whole Leeds thing, the Bielsa thing, you know, Bielsa against Klopp, you know, defending champions against, you know, the championship champions. It was a repeat of 30 years ago when both had won their respective divisions. So much history between the clubs. And, you know, I think everybody really expected maybe the match wouldn't live up to all of that and be a sort of routine, maybe 2 or 3 nil for Liverpool. And at 3 minutes in, you've got to say, Owen, that you feared the worst. You thought everything that could have gone wrong, a little deflection and an outstretched arm, and the refs are having to give those now. That's you're going to see loads of that this season, I think, in the Premier League. Loads more penalties, and you're thinking the worst. But what a display. The thing is, and we've talked about a lot together, haven't we? We know how Leeds play. So you knew that they wouldn't deviate from the plan. And they so nearly got one over on Liverpool because of it.
Yeah, I'm interested actually in the fact that you were in the stadium on Saturday night. Such a crazy thing is developing, and yet there are no fans to enjoy that. What are you seeing? What are you hearing? Like, obviously, I'm sure you can hear Klopp a lot more than you can hear Bielsa, because it seemed, watching on television, he's just sitting on his icebox drinking his coffee. Or is he actually out there? Is he shouting at his players? What are you witnessing on Saturday night?
Yeah, Anfield's a bit weird for the press, because we are so high in that new stand. You know, so we're looking, I mean, it's unusually high up. But you could see Bielsa on his bucket now. As the game went on, he was getting up and he was doing his sort of his measured pace walk, and you could see them getting much more animated, and also at some of the decisions that they felt hadn't gone their way. So he was animated, and you can hear it. You can, because it's so echoey. And obviously, oh, and that was the great sadness, just going into the ground and literally being funneled up to your seat and not seeing any scarves or any enjoyment, or seeing just Leeds walk out on their own to absolute silence, followed by Liverpool, followed by You'll Never Walk Alone. Nothing waving, no shouting, no Leeds fans with tears down their eyes, you know, welcoming them back into the Premier League. So you are left with both benches giving it large. And they were, to be fair, because the game was that enthralling that, not that you ever forget that there's no crowd there, but you're so engrossed in it. But yeah, you could hear that he was animated during that game. He definitely was. And urging his side to play the way that he wants them to play. And I just think it's an absolute credit to them that they never gave in terms of that, or compromised their style, did they? But he urges them on constantly, Owen, from the side. So, yeah, but without losing, you know, focus or panicking, if you see what I mean.
Did you notice many differences from how Leeds United finished last season? Has there been tactical tweaks to the Premier League version of Leeds?
I wouldn't say there was anything noticeably different. No, I honestly thought he'd lead with Bamford front. I really thought he probably would leave Rodrigo on the bench, so I'm thinking there's not going to be any subtle change there, if you like. It was always going to be one up front. Phillips was going to sit in front of the back four. Pablo was going to do his thing and try and pull the strings, Didn't quite work for him, and the two wingers got in behind as best they could, and they passed through the third. So there was absolutely no change. And when you think they were forced to change in terms of the centre-back, Liam Cooper, not that that would have meant a tactical change necessarily, but you had, you know, a young guy in Pascal Struijk coming in and only making his third start for the club and his first at centre-back at senior level for the club, then you're thinking that something might be compromised, even if it isn't the tactics, then it just might be the ability to be able to execute the plan. But they almost did it perfectly. It was like watching what we've seen for the last 2 years. No difference whatsoever, Alan.
Yeah, for sure. And Cooper, of course, the captain as well. So a huge addition to come back over the next little while. Let's just get another update from the Amex Stadium tonight, because there has been another goal. Here is Alan Lewis.
Brighton 1, Chelsea 3, and that might just do it for the Londoners down here on the south coast. A corner from the near side was crossed into the box. It came out to Kurt Zouma, who fired in a shot. It took a big deflection off Adam Webster and was past Matt Ryan in a flash. Brighton 1, Chelsea 3.
70 minutes played in that game at the moment. You're listening to Adam Pope of BBC Leeds reflecting on Saturday's defeat to Liverpool. And after the game, Adam, Marcelo Bielsa said, "We were very efficient, but we didn't create enough goal-scoring opportunities." Now, many managers of newly promoted teams who go to Anfield and have 52% of possession or who record more passes may strike that up as a moral victory or something along those lines. Marcelo Bielsa is very much not that manager.
Absolutely, Owen. And you know, when I heard that stat, that 52 in favour of Leeds to 48 Liverpool, it didn't feel like that because of the last sort of 10, 15 minutes when just before Liverpool got their decisive goal, if you like, it felt like they were really laying siege a bit to Leeds. So Leeds, as you know, last season sort of were high 60s often with their, in terms of their possession, sometimes more, but averaging probably about 64, I think it was. So they're used to having the ball so much. So comparatively speaking, it was less than they're used to having. But to turn over possession on Liverpool, it was quite amazing. However, his key thing was, I can never be happy in defeat. And I get that. And that they did concede four goals. And of the four, it's the set piece in which has been their Achilles heel, to be quite honest, allowing, you know, 6'5" Van Dijk to run off, you know, freely, if you like, and head home was the worst thing of all yesterday for me. But everything else they did pretty well. I mean, Salah's hit the postage stamp with his goal, with his second goal. Penalty, last one, it's a penalty all day. It's just a terrible, well, semi-challenge from Rodrigo. And the first one, I think it's quite interesting that because a lot of people were complaining that it was about that it shouldn't have been given. But the way it is now is that if the arm is outstretched and you're making a defensive block, if you like, or making yourself bigger, it's going to be given whether there's a little nick off a thigh or not. So all in all, pretty avoidable some of those goals. But overall, you have to say it was just a masterful display. But if they don't beat Fulham on Saturday, it sort of counts for nothing. You can't look back and go, well, it was a nearly miss at Liverpool, if you don't pick up the points against the likes of Fulham.
Yeah, well, that is an interesting point, isn't it? The fact that they come up against a team who have undoubted quality in Liverpool, but who play so high and their line is so high, and it seems that the Bielsa game plan is well set up to exploit your very, very high fullbacks, as you saw in the first goal on Saturday. How do you think they'll fare when they come up against teams who like to sit deeper? Fulham are a team who will sit deeper.
Yeah, and when they play just in the sort of after the restart, Leeds won 3-0 and it was a commanding victory in the end, Owen. But at 1-0 up in the first half, then Fulham then took, having been going one behind, took half an hour of that game away from Leeds and actually looked like they were going to come out and possibly get something out of the game. But once Pablo Hernandez came on and started working his magic, then they sort of fell apart and Mitrovic lost interest. And I mean, Leeds ran out comfortably 3-0 winners in the end and were very, very good for it. But I think Fulham and others, if you like, West Brom, used to playing Leeds, know how to play them that little bit more. They've come across them, you know, a few more times. And I imagine it being more like a championship game than maybe a Premier League game. They're just not going to change overnight in that sense. And I'm looking at Fulham as well at this weekend. I mean, they got a really good scene too, didn't they, off Arsenal in the end. So whether they come to try and sort of frustrate Leeds, which has worked in the past to an extent away from home for teams coming in the Championship to Elland Road, then that might be the case. I don't imagine it'll be as open as the game was on Saturday. And you've got to say, tactically, the plan worked really well, because I think you're right. It does suit Leeds more playing against the Premier League sides who don't deny them the space as much. And where they did really well was getting in Trent Alexander-Arnold and Andy Robertson too, who certainly the former of those had probably his worst game in a Liverpool shirt. I mean, he was on toast a couple of times as far as Harrison was concerned.
For sure. There's one other thing I just wanted to ask you about, and it's obviously a story that was doing the rounds last week about Marcelo Bielsa and his contract. He signed a new one-year deal essentially on Thursday, but he'd been basically working without a contract since the end of last season when his previous terms expired. For anybody who's not aware, could you just explain the situation in terms of how Bielsa likes to work with his contracts and I guess how it really is just a one-term deal at a time with Marcelo Bielsa? That two-year deal was sort of a rarity at the time.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, effectively, it's always a one-year deal with him, Owen, I think. The club sort of said to us that it was a two-year deal when he first arrived a couple of years ago, but it was a one-year deal. And obviously, if there was promotion being assured or attained, then it would have been kicked in that the club would be able to keep him. But it's always about whether he wants to stay. So it was then definitely a one-year contract in the second year. Apparently, the whole deal sort of ran up about £6 million a year. But what he does is he sorts the contracts for his entourage, which is quite considerable as well. Mm-hmm. So it is an expensive, you know, it's an expensive deal when you're bringing Marcelo Bielsa in because there's a lot to go with. And it sounds a lot, you know, on the top level at £6 million. But there's a lot of contracts involved in there. Now, that will probably have shifted up now he's in the Premier League. But I think the difficulty this time was not only is he acutely meticulous and wants everything just so that's agreed, it's in writing, it's I's are dotted, T's are crossed. But also, as I understood it, I think this time he didn't use his usual legal person. I understand that he did it himself. So that would have actually taken a lot longer as well, you know, with all the translation and the to-ing and fro-ing. But if he had started without signing the contract, Owen, it was already agreed that his other contract previously would have rolled over. So there wouldn't have been any problem about breaching Premier League rules or anything like that.
Right, that makes sense. Like, it's curious, mate, when you mentioned the huge sums that are involved in this team that are being employed by Leeds United at the moment. You contrast that with West Brom and Fulham at the moment, and there seems to be not an acceptance, but certainly a realisation that the reality of 2020 is that everybody has a lot less money and there is a chance that West Brom and Fulham both get relegated this year, and thereby spending big could have disastrous consequences were they to get relegated. This kind of increases the pressure on Leeds United a little bit, the amount of money they're spending on their management team, doesn't it? That they really can't go down, given how much they're paying.
Yeah, I'd say so. But then you'd have to temper that with that they don't go mad in the transfer market. Yes, they've spent £40 million so far, haven't they, on Robin Koch and also, of course, on Rodrigo that's come in. I think they'll spend again. But comparatively speaking to, say, Aston Villa last season, who were well over 100 million, you're not going to see that from Leeds. So I think the actual, that outlay for Bielsa and his staff, obviously it's paid dividends already by getting them into the Premier League. I just think compared to, say, you know, a wasted transfer, I think, you know, it's a good investment. And obviously you've got a world-class manager on your hands. So I don't see it as a big issue. If they started spending wildly, and they won't, Owen, they will not spend wildly, then, you know, I think maybe one or two more players, then you'd say the whole package could look really damaging. But they went as close as they could to the parameters of financial fair play last season. If you can call it a gamble, you can call it a great business decision. They upped the wage bill, which had been as low as 12 million in Chelino's time when he was in charge. They've upped it to like 40 million. Mm. And that was their, if you like, their assessment of what you need to be a top two club to go up into the Premier League. Now, obviously, that would go up again now with Premier League wages and bonuses and stuff. So they've taken the calculation that if they hadn't gone up, that they still would have been all right this season in the Championship.
Right.
Now, it's a different ball game, isn't it? And I think you'll see a couple more players come in, but I don't think the salary structure of the manager will necessarily be the thing that breaks the camel's back.
No, well, I guess that's one sustainable way of looking at it. Listen, Adam Pope of BBC Leeds, thanks a million for taking the call.
Pleasure.
Football on Off the Ball.
With Paddy Power. More confident than United before a Europa League final. Gamble responsibly. See dunlewy.net.